Well, even we weren't in Shida Mayapur, it was very nice to speak about Lord Chaitanya and his associates, some of his associates, yesterday. It was so enlivening that I dreamt about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And all morning during japa, I was happy to think about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I wasn't trying not to. I was happy to think about Bhaktivinoda Thakur and how important he is in many, many, many ways in our practical lives and devotional service. One of those ways is that he served as the revealer of the Dham of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Maybe some of you have read the biography of his life called The Seventh Goswami. Is this a Spanish translation? Going to be a little distracting. But. Seventh Goswami because, like the six Goswamis, under Lord Chaitanya's direct instruction, the six Goswamis were sent to Vrindavan with two primary tasks. Write books. As they heard the instructions from Lord Chaitanya, to take all those instructions and make them into literatures, which they did. Profuse literature. And the second instruction was to reestablish the lost places of Krishna's pastimes, as Mahaprabhu had personally done with Radha Kund and Shama Kund. He gave the instruction to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami to do that. And likewise, Bhaktivinoda Thakur received in a dream a direct instruction from Lord Chaitanya to go to Sridhar Mayapur and establish the lost places of his pastimes. The circumstance was that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was increasing and increasing and increasing in his strong desire to go to Vrindavan and find Krishna. Hare Krishna. And with that, a increasing detachment from his duties as a high court judge in Puri. So at one point, he just left. And he was traveling to Vrindavan with the plan of never coming back to Puri, just going to Vrindavan and staying in Vrindavan. And in the course of travel, he had a dream. Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in his dream and told him, don't go to Vrindavan now. Go to Mayapur. And I want you to establish those places where I performed my pastimes. And write books according to my teachings. Same instruction. And so he did. He stopped his journey to Vrindavan, went back to Puri and redirected everything and some important details, but he ended up in as a district magistrate in Krishnanagar. Krishnanagar is in the district of Nadia. It's like the capital, or at least where the court, the system, apparently, as far as I can understand, the system that the British used was that not always was the capital the same place where the district courthouse was, but the district courthouse was a very important place. Anyway, So he was the district magistrate in Krishnanagar. But he made his residence in Godrumdweep. And it's very significant because Godrumdweep is one of the 9 islands in Navadweep, Nava, meaning 9 islands. And Godrumdweep embodies the limb of devotional service of the process of hearing, Shravanam Kirtanam. So, Kirtanam. So, from that island of Kirtanam, prior to Bhaktivinod Thakur, Lord Nityananda had made that his headquarters. His home was in Kardaha, but his preaching headquarters was in Godrumdweep. For a spiritual reason, it's the island of Kirtan, and it's where Surabhi Kunj, very near to where Bhaktivinod Thakur kept his home, was Surabhi Kunj. A long explanation of how Godrumdweep became Godrumadweep. Surabhi cow, Go, was resting under a banyan tree, Druma, in the Dweepa of Godrumdweepa, where Markandeya Rishi, who had this benediction that turned out to be a problem. This benediction was he would live a long life for 7 yuga cycles. The only problem is, after each yuga cycle, there's a partial devastation, and he was subject to that partial devastation after the end of, in between the yugas, yuga cycles. So he was in this ocean of devastation and had to swim for a whole, it was 7 days of Brahma. So after the 100 yuga cycles, it was the night of Brahma and was in that ocean of devastation for the night of Brahma. That's a long time. The day of Brahma is equal to his night, and the day of Brahma is 1,000 yuga cycles, 7 days of Brahma. So he had a big problem swimming in the ocean of devastation with no shelter because everything was underwater. Then he, almost at the time of just giving up, he saw an island, a dweepa, happened to be Godrumdweepa. And when he reached that island, he saw a cow, Surabhi, and he took milk from the cow to revive himself. And she described that this dweepa is a spiritual island, just like we find in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna describes within this material world there's a place, Sweta Dweep, that at the time of cosmic annihilation is not destroyed because it's spiritual, so Godrumdweep remained. So, Surabhi remained there, waiting for the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Nityananda, being non-different than, or the direct expansion of Lord Chaitanya, could understand this is a very special place, the island of chanting. So he made that his base for propagating the chanting of the holy name. It was the order of Lord Chaitanya, for go back to Bengal and preach the holy name. So he traveled, but that was his headquarters. So Bhaktivinod Thakur similarly made that, just down the street from Surabhi Kunj, his headquarters. And from that place of headquarters, he did what Lord Chaitanya in the dream had instructed him to do. He wrote many, many, many books. In the course of Bhaktivinod Thakur's life, Anybody here ever try to write a book? You know, for school, you have to sometimes write a paper. How many pages is a paper? And how long it takes to write a paper? And put a bunch of papers together and you can maybe get a book. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote over 100 books. And it wasn't like he had nothing else to do besides write books. He was a householder. He was a householder with 10 children. Some of you are parents or some of you are kids in families where there's 2 kids or 3 kids. 10 kids. And he was a district magistrate. So he had all of his duties to do at work. And not only duties, but he had social and civic responsibilities to mix with people and all that kind of obligation. So the way he did his writing, he just didn't sleep. He did it at night. He slept a little bit. Slept like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then he wrote. And, you know, using our ISKCON vernacular, he was fired up. He didn't like nod out, you know, when he was at his desk or when he was chanting his japa or sitting at the high court bench, or he was on another platform. And that other platform was accessed through mercy and through the chanting of the holy name. Like, you know, one of the books that he wrote, was considering this morning, was Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. There's a core in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. He gave details of historical event that had happened before his time, something like 350 years previously, but he knew it down to detail, and it wasn't imaginative. It was realization. It was the same way that Rupa and Sanatan, we find in Bhakti Ratnakar, how Rupa and Sanatan fulfilled the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They would go to those places that according to the scriptures, so that it was scripturally based, according to scriptures, they would go to a certain place and absorb themselves in the pastime and chant the holy name. In such absorption of chanting the holy name that the pastimes of the Lord would reveal themselves within their hearts, verifying that this is the place, like Ter Kadamba, a place in Vrindavan, since that's in between where Shrimati Radharani resided with her so-called husband Abhimanyu in Nandagram. And somewhere in between, in a grove of kadamba trees. So according to scriptural indication, that was the general area, and he sat in the midst of this grove of kadamba trees and chanted and chanted and chanted, and the pastimes of Radha and Krishna were disclosed to him. He was on another platform of Krishna consciousness. And likewise, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was on another platform of Krishna consciousness. It was Navadvip Dham Mahatmya is describing a visit to the sacred places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes organized by Lord Nityananda himself, taking the young Jiva Goswami when he was just a young man, old enough to leave home but not mature enough to have not even having met Lord Chaitanya. So he had no opportunity to meet Lord Chaitanya, but he met Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda took him to those places. And the descriptions in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya are, well, they'll knock your socks off. They're really elevated. Very, very, very deep and profound. Towards the end of this month, I'm going to Seattle. And during my visit in Seattle, I'm going to be discussing another book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's Harinam Chintamani. It's a discussion between Haridas Thakur, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking Haridas Thakur about the glories of the holy name. It's very similar in dynamic to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asking Ramananda Roy, what's the goal of life? What is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asking somebody else, what's the goal of life? But he wanted to hear from the mouth of Ramananda Roy, because that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He likes to glorify his devotees. He would go hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. He would sit for hours every day and listen to Gadadhar Pandit describe Srimad Bhagavatam. Not like he didn't know Srimad Bhagavatam, but he enjoyed with great happiness hearing his devotees speak, and the devotees would understand. As Ramananda Roy said, or as Haridas Thakur said, I'm a puppet, and you're the puppeteer, and you're pulling the strings, and you're making me speak. You can make me speak however you like. Here goes. And then he would speak. And the exchange between Haridas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was it just Bhaktivinoda Thakur's imagination? Or like poeticizing something or other? It's his ecstatic realization from going very deeply into the chanting of the holy name. And the range of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing went from the highest, he wrote books in pure Sanskrit. He translated things from Sanskrit to Bengali, from Sanskrit to English. He wrote commentaries on our Acharya's commentaries from Sanskrit. He would commentary on commentaries. He wrote histories. He wrote fiction. He wrote songs. He wrote little, very simple question-answer things for illiterate people, so that in a village, for his Namahatta preaching, so that the village elder person that could read Bengali could explain to those who couldn't read by question-answer method. And then for those persons that couldn't even read, he would just teach songs. They would memorize the songs, and by memorizing the songs, they would learn the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, way up here to way down here and everything in between, as part of his collection of 100 books. Endless compassion. Indefatigable compassion. With such depth that persons who came to hear from him included Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who Bhaktivinoda Thakur accepted as his Shiksha Guru. He was Sarvabhuma Jagannath Das Babaji. He was amongst the Babajis in Vrindavan. He was Sarvabhuma. He was the most learned, elevated Babaji who moved from Vrindavan to come to Mayapur at the request of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and went to Godrumdweep and sat and heard Bhaktivinoda Thakur discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarvabhuma Jagannath Das Babaji, sitting at the feet of his Shiksha disciple, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And Gorkishore Das Babaji, who was renunciation personified, sitting at the feet of a grahastha with 10 children, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had this, not only understood, he had the acumen, spiritual acumen, to understand where the pastimes of Mahaprabhu took place, but he also had the vision of Rupa Goswami, similarly, to see that this glorious teaching go all over the world. So from that little place in Godrumdweep, he printed in English language the life and precepts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and sent it all over the world. But nobody in the world even heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even in India didn't hear of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he was, you know, hear ye, hear about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Receive this literature and understand his wonderful teachings and pastimes. He writes, that day will come when Vaishnavas, and he specifically says, from Russia, from Africa, from China, and from America, and all over the world will come together and chant Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana, at a time when nobody ever heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had that vision. He had that vision because he had that spiritual acumen. And where did he get that spiritual acumen? From descending mercy. According to the biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't even read Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but there was not a good name for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because over the generations his followers had deviated. They had deviated so badly that in ways that they deviated, it was a disgrace. It was a bad name. But when he finally got a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was in his mid-30s. He was married and had many children. Before he started his path of becoming a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when he read Chaitanya Charitamrita, he read it again. And then he read it again. And then he started writing. Because that was his gift. He was a writer, as well as a speaker. And he started writing about the wonderful teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as disclosed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Like, you know, he didn't become Bhakta Kedarnath Dutt. Bhakta Kedarnath. He didn't start the Bhakta program until he was in his mid-30s. Think of it, some of you here are a little younger than that. But, by mercy, and by the chanting of the holy name, he was able to disclose things that are beyond our vision, because of his spiritual vision. And it was the impetus of that vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he prayed for a ray of Vishnu to come, and that came in the form of his son, Bhaktisiddhanta. So he passed on that same vision to his son, who thought the world should hear about Krishna consciousness, about the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who then passed that on to Srila Prabhupada, and therefore we're here. We're so indebted to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And another one of the wonderful features of the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was that he's so contemporary. Like, when we hear the description of the, I was saying this yesterday, when we hear the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and exchanges of loving dealings with his devotees, that's more contemporary than Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna 5,000 years ago. Every year that passes, we still say 5,000 years ago. And Lord Chaitanya was 500 years ago, even it's like 540 or something like that, 500 years ago. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was just 100 years ago. With that same amazing capacity, which means we're eligible too. It's not like if you weren't present at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, forget it. You can appreciate how wonderful those devotees, and you can just struggle with Kali Yuga because we didn't appear at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We're just unfortunate. No. Not like that. If one is a recipient of mercy and one can chant the holy name with great purity, the same as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or to whatever degree Krishna wants to empower. Because all of this is empowerment. That one becomes an instrument for the desires of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I want to spend a little bit of time discussing one of the places we went where there's several examples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's empowering different devotees in amazing ways. And then we'll come back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then we'll come back to our current role as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one of the places we visited was Srikhanda. And we hear about Srikhanda in Chaitanya Charitamrita mainly from the kirtans at Rath Yatra. During the Rath Yatra kirtan in Puri, there's a detailed description by Krishnadas Kaviraj of the 7 kirtan parties that were formed with so many Radanga players, kartel players, and dancers and singers. Each party designated, personally orchestrated by Lord Chaitanya. There were 4 groups that were local Puri devotees, and they had their assignments. And there are 3 others. One was from Shantipur, Lord Advaita Acharya, and his associates. And another was Kulinagram, that's the present-day Navadvip, and the devotees from Kulinagram, they would form another party, and the devotees from Srikhanda, and they would form another party. And one of the chief dancers in that group from Srikhanda was Nadahari. In Srikhanda, Nadahari was among the, if not the foremost, of the followers of Lord Chaitanya at that time. Prior to him, or it's a contemporary with him, was a even less commonly heard name, Chiranjiva. Chiran Sen was a Mahabhagavata Vaishnav who had 2 sons, and those 2 sons later became disciples of Srinivasacharya. Long story. But Chiranjiva died when he was young, a young married man. And Chiran Sen moved to Srikhanda just to be with Nadahari. And Nadahari was the spiritual guide for Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya, in our disciplic line, following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you look at that disciplic succession line in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose names do we find? Rupa and Sanatan. And following Rupa and Sanatan, whose name do we find? Jiva Goswami. Following Jiva Goswami, Srinivasacharya. Contemporary with Srinivasacharya were Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda. But between the 3 of them, Srinivasacharya. And when Srinivasacharya was just a small boy, his spiritual guide was Nadahari. The place that they resided were very close. So even as a small boy, Srinivasacharya was very special. I'll tell that Leela quickly. Srinivasacharya, before he was born, his mother and father were devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a grihastha, before he accepted sannyas, before he went to Puri. They were Krishna bhaktas, and when they came to know of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were devoted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. So, one time, the father was feeling great separation from Nimai Pandit, so he wanted to go to Navadvip to visit him. And the journey to go from his home in Yajigram, he passed through Katwa. It just happened when he was passing through Katwa, they saw a huge assembly of people. It was not a festival day, so he didn't understand what was the reason for this huge, massive assembly. So he got closer and closer to where the center of that assembly was, and he saw that Lord Chaitanya was about to take sannyas. He was in shock, as everybody else was in shock. And he watched the hair of Lord Chaitanya being shaved by the barber. And it fell to the ground. And then they went to take bath in the Ganga, and he sat by his spiritual master, Keshava Bharati, and heard Keshava Bharati, after giving him his sannyas mantra, speak his sannyas name. And his sannyas name was Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And Srinivasa's father just couldn't. He was Nimai Pandit has taken sannyas. He's going to carry Danda, and he saw him as a master and lord and not renunciate and undergoing austerities and traveling by foot all over the countryside, and he couldn't handle it. So he went back home. And all he could say was Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He was in a daze. In fact, it went on for 3 months. Day and night, he couldn't do his duty. It was just walk around town saying Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He was stunned. So everybody started giving him a different name. They called him Chaitanya Das. He and his wife were very devoted Vaishnavas. And they had decided together that they would live their life as husband and wife without children and just devote their all energy to service to Krishna. But after some passage of time, Chaitanya Das felt within himself this surprising desire that he wanted to have a son. And he thought it would go away. It was just something that would go away. It didn't go away. It became stronger and stronger. And so finally he confided that to his wife. And she expressed the same thing. That same thing is there in my heart, and I don't understand this. Let us make a pilgrimage to Puri and go visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and ask him how we should understand this situation. So when they reached Puri, they went straight to the Jagannath temple, and as they were preparing to enter the Jagannath temple, they saw Lord Chaitanya. And he had just been in the temple and was preparing to go to Gambira. And before they even spoke, they paid obeisances, and before they even spoke a word, he spoke to them and said, go into the temple, worship Lord Jagannath, let him know what are your desires, and he will fulfill your desires. That was all that the exchange took place. And then he went to Gambira, and he told to Govinda, his servant, Chaitanya Das and his wife very soon will have a child. That child will be the embodiment of my compassion. and his name will be Srinivas. And he'll be a great acharya leading the Vaishnavas throughout the land. So, Govinda shared that with the other devotees, and after he shared that with the other devotees, also Chaitanya Das and his wife heard. How did Mahaprabhu know what was our desire? Because he's omniscient. But not only they would have a child, but he would be a great, great, great acharya. So they understood. Somehow, Mahaprabhu knows our desire. And they went back to their hometown, and after some time, a child was born. And they named him Srinivas. So even before Srinivas was born, he was famous amongst all the Vaishnavas. It was known he will be the next acharya, following in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the person who Srinivas took as his spiritual guide was a resident in Srikhanda, Narahari. In fact, Narahari would, because the boy was too young to travel, Narahari would leave his place and go to see Srinivas to give his blessings. And when Srinivas was old enough, he came to Narahari to hear from him the teachings of devotional service, because he was also a Mahabhagavata Vaishnav, as you will hear as we go along. Most elevated soul. Many other things happened in relation to Srinivas and Narahari. So in this village of Srikhanda, there was one young devotee, a young student, whose name was Lochan, who later became Lochan Das Thakur. And as was the system in India at the time, and even Prabhupada described even during his time, no longer, but at that time, marriages were arranged when the children were young. They were literally married. The girl would remain at her parents' home. The boy would remain at his parents' home. And on their birthday, some gift would come from the girl to the boy, and vice versa. So some service was there, but there wasn't any living together. They were married. So that when they grew up, they knew who they would be married to. So Lochan was from a Brahmana family, and he was married when he was like 7 years old. And the girl was like 5 years old. And then, after some time, Lochan wanted to get the association of Narahari. So he went to the ashram of Narahari and requested to become his student, so he became his student. And he learned from Narahari the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the scriptures, along with grammar and all the fundamentals of Sanskrit. So after some time, when Lochan is now very, very fixed up student of Narahari, the girl had become of maturity age, and the parents of the girl were anxious that Lochan should come back and take care of his wife. But Lochan wasn't coming back. So they went to Lochan's parents, and Lochan said, oh, he's staying in the ashram of Narahari. So then the parents of the girl went to Narahari and said, you have a student in your ashram, but he's married. And our daughter is his wife. And this is not very good. It would be violating religious principles. The young man should take care of his wife. Please do something. So what's a sadhu to do in a circumstance like that? He went to his student, Lochan, and said, you're married, you didn't tell me. He said, oh, that was when I was just 7 years old. He said, well, you're married, and what's the girl to do? I understand you have no interest in being married, but what about the poor girl? You have to do something. Consider. You have to do something. That's all he said. You have to do something. So on the order of Narahari, Lochan decided he should go to the village and see what he could do. So when he went to the village, he was looking for the residence of his in-laws. He didn't know where they lived. So he was asking around as he saw people in the street, and one of the persons he saw was a young girl. So he asked the young girl, "Mataji, can you tell me where so-and-so lives?" "Oh, down the street and over that way. That's where so-and-so lives." So he went to the home, and then he told the father, "Here's the situation. I was married when I was 7, but I've since that time have been in Narahari's ashram, and I have no concern at all for marriage." And they said, "Well, what are we to do? Because you married our daughter. She can't remarry. There's no such thing in Vedic culture, remarriage. She needs your protection." So just at that time, the same girl that he received directions from where to find the home came in the home. And that was his wife. Because they were so young when they were married, neither of them recognized each other. And so he was introduced. "This is your wife." He said, "No, that's not my wife. That's Mataji." "Because when I just saw her, I didn't know who she was. I just addressed her as Mataji. I've accepted her as mother, and I couldn't possibly, having accepted her as mother, treat her as a wife." So the father said, "This is a problem. You sit with her and work something out." So he explained the whole thing to the girl. "I don't know what's going to work for you, but this isn't going to work for me because I can't accept you as a wife. You're Mataji. I can't marry my mother." And being a very pious girl and seeing the purity of Lochan, she accepted. And so Lochan went back to the ashram of Narahari, very happy. He felt by the mercy of you, Narahari, you said to do something, I did something, and it all worked out very nicely. I don't have to be married now. And he stayed in the ashram of Narahari. He eventually took initiation from Narahari. And under the order of Narahari, he was given the assignment to write a biography of the life of Lord Chaitanya. So on that order, he did so. The book was Chaitanya Mangal, a very spontaneous type of literature. It's not anything like Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is very scholarly, very thorough, very systematic. And Chaitanya Mangal is spontaneous. He's not making any attempt to present things with logic and reason. He just spontaneously expresses things. Very different type of literature. Chaitanya Mangal by Lochan Das Thakur. And he wrote songs. And he understood also that just writing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he felt very badly, because according to the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, one who accepts Lord Chaitanya but not Lord Nityananda is an offender. So he also wrote some very wonderful songs in glorification of Lord Nityananda. Lochan Das Thakur resided for a long time in Srikanda. Contemporary with Narahari was his brother, Mukunda. Mukunda was by trade a physician. In fact, he was such an excellent physician that the king had commissioned Mukunda to be his physician. And there's a description in Chaitanya Charitamrita of one time when Mukunda was visiting the king, and giving treatment to the king, medical treatment, because it was during the day when the attendants to the king came and held a huge fan to block and shade the sun so he could be in the shade. It was a peacock fan. And when the peacock fan was brought in by the attendant and held over the king, he was looking at the king, but he was looking at the peacock fan and thinking, looking at the peacock fan, he thought of Krishna. And when he thought of Krishna, he was such an elevated stage of devotion that he just got absorbed in ecstatic devotion to Krishna and fell to the ground, unconscious, in a swoon of ecstasy. And when he fell, he was up on a raised platform, so he fell down several stairs. And the physician was very dear to the king, so the king got off his throne and came down and asked Mukunda, "Are you okay? Are you hurt? What happened?" And Mukunda said, "Oh, I have this disease, something like epilepsy, and sometimes I lose consciousness. It's okay, I'll be all right." But the king, because he was an extraordinary person himself, he could understand it's not epilepsy. This Mukunda saw the peacock fan and he thought of Krishna and he became filled with ecstasy and he lost external consciousness because of his deep love for Krishna. He said, you're a great saint. And I'm so fortunate to have such an elevated person as you as my physician. He treated him with great, great, great respect. So Mukunda, the Mukunda Sarkar was his family name, and Narahari Sarkar, they were brothers. Mukunda had one son, and the son's name was Raghunandan. And Raghunandan was very special young boy. Some children are like this. They just have such an attraction for anything devotional. That was Raghunandan, like to a very extreme degree. We saw the deity of Narahari, a very attractive deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Pran Goranga. He's standing in a very interesting pose. One hand is on his hip, the other hand is like this. And he's looking right at you, smiling. Very, very beautiful deity of Mahaprabhu. We'll have pictures after some time. So he's worshipping his deity of Pran Goranga, and also he had a Shalagram Shila, and he had a deity of Gopinath. So Raghunandan would sit and watch his father do his deity worship every day with great absorption, just watching everything his father was doing. And the father could understand that he would like to do some worship too. So one day, when Mukunda had to go out of town for some business, he requested his little boy, Raghunandan, to make the offering, the system that he followed as Vaishnava, was he would rise very early and do his puja and do his daily sadhana, and after he completed his sadhana, he would make some offering, and then part of what was offered would become his breakfast, and then after he would leave, there would be another offering, which his wife would make, and then when he returned home at the end of the day, that was his evening meal. That was the system that he followed. So he had did his morning activity and told his son, just as I have shown you, and he went through the whole procedure, this is how you make offerings. You've seen him ring the bell and say prayers and ask Krishna. You may not all the prayers. You can just say with sincerity of heart, my dear Lord, please accept this offering. And Krishna will accept. you think you can do that, Raghunandan? He said, yes, yes, I'd like to do that. So Mukunda went. And everything was arranged. The wife of Mukunda prepared the plate, gave it to her son. The son placed the plate before the deity, and just as his father had done, rang a little bell and said some prayers and asked Gopinath, please eat. Take this offering. And he waited some time, and the offering was still there on the plate. And so he asked again, dear Gopinath, please accept this offering. And again he pleaded with Gopinath, and everything stayed there on the plate, and he began to cry with such sincerity that Gopinath was moved to eat everything that was on the plate. The plate was made empty. Raghunandan was very happy, so he brought the plate to his mother and said, here. And she said, Raghunandan, what happened to the prasad? And he said, Gopinath ate it. She said, could you describe what happened? And she described everything that happened. So she didn't know what to do. He's just a little boy. Maybe he's making up this story, and he ate everything. I hope he first at least offered it to the deity. So when Mukunda came home, he took his bath and sat down to take prasad and asked his wife to bring the prasad, and she said, my dear husband, there's no prasad today. He said, what? She described everything, and this is what Raghunandan said. I don't know what to make of it. So Mukunda called his son, Raghunandan, please come. Can you tell me what happened today? How did it go when you made the offering to Gopinath? And he described everything and got to the part and said, and Gopinath ate everything. Finally he ate everything. After I pleaded and pleaded, he finally ate everything. So Mukunda was doubtful and said, well, your mother has made some laddu. Would you like to make the offering of the laddu this evening? And Raghunandan, yes, I'd like to make the offering. Okay, she'll bring the plate and you can make the offering. And so he went through the same procedure and, dear Gopinath, please accept this offering. And many times, and Gopinath didn't take the offering, at least he thought. So then he began to cry, please, Gopinath. And so Gopinath reached down and bit into the laddu. And Mukunda was watching from behind the door and saw the deity taking the laddu. And he only ate half because he had just finished his whole big meal. So Mukunda called out, ah! He's eaten directly from the plate, from the hand of my son, Raghunandan. Didi put the laddu down and stood. And so news spread about this wonderful little boy that was so pure in his devotion that Gopinath ate the entire offering. And they even saved for a long time that part of the laddu that was remaining and worshipped that part of the laddu that was remaining. And they began worshipping Raghunandan for his pure devotion. And just like with Srinivas, as soon as he was born, he was famous. Raghunandan became famous. People came from distant places to pay their respects to this pure devotee of the Lord. And one of those personalities that wanted to come and pay his respects was Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram Thakur was another one of the many pure devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was a very unique devotee in many ways. One of those uniquenesses was he kept a whip, and whoever he would touch with his whip would become filled with ecstatic love of God. When Srinivas was just a small boy, he went to pay his respects to Abhiram Thakur. And Abhiram Thakur hit him with his whip once. And Srinivas went into ecstasy. He hit him again. He hit him a third time, and his wife said, "Stop. It's too much ecstasy for any person to handle." And another thing with Abhiram Thakur was when he would pay obeisances to a deity that was not worshipped with pure devotion, the deity would crack into pieces just by his paying obeisances. And if he met a person and paid obeisances and there was even a tinge of material desire in that person, their head would crack. So Abhiram Thakur heard about Raghunandan and he wanted to come and pay his respects at the house of Mukunda Sarkar. And Mukunda Sarkar thought, what will happen when Abhiram Thakur comes to pay his respect to my son Raghunandan? I know he's an elevated devotee, but I wouldn't want to lose my son. But Abhiram Thakur is such an elevated Vaishnava, I can't say no. What to do? What to do? And so, when he heard that Abhiram Thakur was approaching, he decided he would arrange for his son to be just in the next village, hidden in someone's house. So when Abhiram Thakur came, he came right to Mukunda and said, "I'd like to pay my respects to your wonderful son. I've heard this. How pure of devotion he is." And Mukunda said, "Oh, my son is out of town right now. So you might, anyone else you'd like to see while you're here?" He said, "No, I came to see him. I'll just wait." So he sat under a tree. We went to that place, the tree where Abhiram Thakur sat and waited. And by arrangement of providence, lo and behold, Raghunandan just happened to be, he left the house from the nearby village and came right to that tree where Abhiram Thakur was sitting. And as soon as Raghunandan saw Abhiram Thakur, who was ecstatic in love of God, he ran to greet him and paid his obeisances at the feet of Abhiram Thakur, who was seated under this tree. And Abhiram Thakur got down from the seat and paid his obeisances to Raghunandan. And they embraced. His head didn't crack. They embraced. And they started dancing in spontaneous ecstasy. There was no kirtan. They just started dancing in ecstasy, being in contact with one another. And dancing and dancing and dancing in ecstasy. One of the depictions, there's a, like big murals where Abhiram Thakur and Raghunandan met. And one of them depicts this pastime where Abhiram Thakur had some ankle ornament on his foot, and he was dancing and dancing so wildly that the ankle ornament went flying off his foot and landed some kilometers away in a pond. So they now enshrined that pond, they call it Nippur Kund, meaning the ankle ornament of Abhiram Thakur fell in this pond. We took prasad there. It was a very nice place. Very peaceful, very quiet, simple place. Lord Nityananda one time visited Sri Kanda with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And to be in the presence with Narahari, they were so happy. Narahari, Mukunda, and Raghunandan, all contemporaries and residents of Sri Kanda. They had a wonderful kirtan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda were dancing and dancing in great ecstasy. And Lord Nityananda entered into a mood of Balaram. And he started calling out, Madhu! Madhu! He wanted honey. And because Narahari was also on a platform of ecstatic love, he could understand Lord Nityananda's mood. So he went to a pond, a nearby pond. He visited that place. Forget what they called the pond. Madhu something. And he brought a palm full of water. And as he was coming to Lord Nityananda with his palm full of water to give him honey, it turned into honey. And Lord Nityananda took the honey from his hand and was very satisfied with the service of Narahari. There's other leelas connected with Sri Kanda, but it's just a very, very wonderful place. I'll say one other one. One of the time, it's an important one for our understanding of devotional service. The practice we discussed yesterday, Shivananda Sen would regularly bring the devotees, not just from Mayapur, but all of West Bengal. He was like, you know, the elder or the senior amongst them. And he collected them, gathered them, and made arrangements for them to go to Puri. And they would stay for the 4 months after the Jagannath Rath Yatra, stay in Puri and come back. And when it was time for them to return, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent time with each and every devotee before they would go back and impart some instruction or some inspiration or some encouragement so they could carry on in their devotional service for the next 8 months in separation from Lord Chaitanya. So, one of those occasions, the residents of Sri Kanda came to see Lord Chaitanya. So he asked Narahari a question. No, he asked Mukunda a question. The question he asked Mukunda, it's not our Mukunda here, it's Mukunda Sarkar. He asked Mukunda, here is Raghunandan. And some people say that Raghunandan is your son. And some people say that you are the son of Raghunandan. Can you tell me which is it? And immediately, without hesitation, Mukunda said, I am the son of Raghunandan. And how is that? Because he has inspired me in Krishna consciousness. By his Krishna consciousness, I have become Krishna conscious. Therefore, he is my father, and I am his son. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy with that answer because of the simplicity of mood of devotion of Mukunda. Not about position or age or titles, but being very grateful for receiving inspiration in Krishna consciousness from even one's son. We have that situation in a number of devotees where by good fortune they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, and after some time, by their Krishna consciousness, their parents become Krishna conscious. Or parents don't usually think like Mukunda is thinking. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave instructions to the three of them. He said, Mukunda, you should return to Sri Kanda and earn both material and spiritual wealth. And Raghunandan, you should worship the deity form of the Lord. And Narahari, you should stay here and assist in the preaching. So Narahari stayed in Puri. He stayed under the care of Gadadhar Pandit. And like Mahaprabhu, he heard every day the Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. And from hearing the Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit, he became a wonderful speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. He became a great preacher. And therefore, later on, when Srinivas came into the association of Narahari, he also learned Srimad Bhagavatam from Narahari. But then the encouragement was that Srinivas should hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit directly. So these, in our activities of the Hare Krishna movement, there are these three continuing categories of service. One is, there has to be some finance to take care of our activities. So Mukunda was given that assignment. And it's not that by having that assignment he was reduced in his Krishna consciousness. He was on the highest platform of Krishna consciousness. And someone may have to do some deity worship. So Raghunandan was very, very, very ecstatic in deity worship. Later he worshipped that same deity, Pran Garanga, in great devotion, along with the deity of Gopinath. And Narahari was given the assignment of preaching on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message and his mission. And he became a very, very powerful preacher. So each of us may have some different services to do. And those different services may be assigned to us according to our nature. And any one of those services can permit or lead us to perfection in Krishna consciousness. And if we do them in proper manner, especially in coordination and cooperation with the other services that are also being done, it makes for a very dynamic instrument or tool for spreading Krishna consciousness. If the deity worship is not attended to in a proper way, it's not conducive for the Krishna consciousness of the devotees. And similarly, each of the others, all the parts must be there. Not that one part is better, the preacher is better, the pujari is better, or the one who is earning money is better. All are important in our mission of Krishna consciousness. So now back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was a householder. There's no indication of Narahari being a householder or not a householder. Certainly Mukunda was a householder. And Srinivasacharya, in our line of the disciplic succession, following these greatly renounced personalities, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the next in the line was a householder. Srinivasacharya, by the request of his mother, became married. In fact, he had two wives. And of those two wives, he had six children. And one of those six children was a girl, three boys, three girls, and one of the girls became an initiating spiritual master in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the daughter of Srinivasacharya. Hemalata was her name. So as with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srinivasacharya and Mukunda Sarkar and most of the persons here, grihasthas have a very important role. There's no limitation in being Krishna conscious or being an instrument for spreading Krishna consciousness because of ashram. The limitation is our eagerness for receiving mercy and being instruments for delivering that mercy according to our capacity to receive and according to our capacity to distribute that mercy. And that was one of the themes that emerged from the whole, after speaking person after person after person, this a very strong theme of the compassion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the importance of our connecting with that compassion and being compassionate, being instruments of compassion. And Mahaprabhu can empower beyond our little frail, puny capacity. He can empower us far beyond even our imagination. Prabhupada spoke like that about himself. When he left to fulfill the instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta, although he thought very big, he said about himself, it was beyond my imagination that things would come this way. But by mercy, it has been manifested. I've done nothing great, Prabhupada said. I just followed the instructions of my Guru Maharaj with faith. And something wonderful has happened by the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And that's the mood of a Chaitanya Bhakta. Just take the instructions we receive. And Mukunda is spiritual and material wealth. And Raghunandan, worship the deity. And they're in the same family. Narahari, become a preacher. Study under Gadadhar Pandit, become a preacher. So whatever the services that we're given, whatever our position or age or ashram or any other kind of designation, none of those things have anything to do with our real spiritual identity. It's receiving mercy, being grateful for that mercy that we receive, try to carry out the instructions that are embodying that mercy, and wonderful things can happen beyond our imagination by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's a reality. It's not a wishful thinking or dreaming. It's reality. It's what a Hare Krishna movement is. It's a manifestation of that mercy. And we're meant to continue that flow of mercy. Our great acharyas, previous acharyas, are no longer physically present, but their mercy is accessible to us. If we can hear their instructions, receive the mercy of those instructions and carry them forward, and those who are representing them can certainly assist us in achieving that goal, that objective, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's just a little portion of what we spent 9 long days getting saturated with the same understanding in place after new place after new place. And another theme that was emerging was that each place embodies a special feature of that mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a special message or potency within each place, and going from place to place to place to place, how diverse are the moods of devotion of the different devotees and the glorious thing that they manifested in their lives. But the theme binding it all was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. How Mahavadanyaya. And we can access that. We can become recipients of that mercy and access the compassion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and effectively spread Krishna consciousness. Especially we do it together in a cooperative manner. Hare Krishna. Honey. Yes.
There is no question. Our movement is very special, and even to this day, we are the recipients of the mercy of previous acharyas. There are great devotees within this movement of spreading Krishna consciousness, and no question about that. And yet, when you study the lives of Sivananda Sena and Mukunda Sarkar and Narahari and Srinivas, they are all, they seem to be very, very special, just like how Krishna brought his own associates from
yes.
the spiritual world.
Yes, that's right.
Mahaprabhu.
That's right.
Must have brought all of these personalities with him.
Yes.
So there seems to be like a real concentration of these specialized, these very, very special
yes.
devotees at close to the time when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastime, and around, you know, a few, some, maybe 100 years or maybe a little more than that. And then, is it like they come they came with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and performed those extraordinary pastimes, and by their behavior, by how they conducted themselves and their interactions and all those things, it's so amazing, you know.
Is the message, you know, that's well and good for that time because they're special associates, but it doesn't apply to us? Is that your message?
No, I was thinking, like, is it like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he brought all of them?
Yes, he did.
And then
they're eternal associates.
And after that, of course, their mercy is available for them.
Yes, yes. Well, here's an interesting thing that I heard while at our meeting in Bombay in relation to Jai Pataka Maharaj. One devotee was sharing this. That Prabhupada was asking somebody's help. Oh, I remember what it was. Yeah. Prabhupada was asking somebody's help, an Indian government person, to help Jai Pataka Maharaj get an Indian passport, Indian citizenship. And Prabhupada, he asked, why would he want an Indian passport, Indian citizenship? He has American citizenship. Everyone's going from India to America to get American citizenship. Why would he want? He said, because I want him to preach here in Bengal and help my mission. He said, but, you know, he's American. He said, yes, but he speaks Bengali. He said, well, he speaks Bengali. Well, that's good, but how will he understand the culture? How will he be able to do this? He kept giving his reasons why, you know, why do you want this? Finally, Prabhupada said, he's an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Please help him get his passport and get his citizenship. Well, that's not saying, you know, he's one of Lord Chaitanya's eternal associates. Maybe Prabhupada meant like that. He didn't say eternal associates, but one of Lord Chaitanya's associates. But by being engaged in this confidential service, it connects one with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whether Nitya Siddha or Sadhana Siddha or Kripa Siddha, if one can get the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by mercy, we all have an eternal relationship with the personality of Godhead. And that may have been forgotten and covered. But the fullness of that relationship can be restored. And so going back to what you just said, yes, it's these personalities, they're not only perfected souls, but as perfected souls, they're very compassionate. They want to give that mercy to others, to us. They're begging us to take it. And back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is one of the greatest revealers of that mercy. At the time that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was taking up the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was obscure. And even whatever was known had a bad name, particularly amongst the intellectual people. And that was his principal audience, at least the circle that he moved in, social circle that he moved in. It was like total opposition. And he was so powerful, he turned it around, that the intellectuals and there was no real middle class in India at the time, it was one or the other. And the uneducated people and the highly educated people, wealthy people and the simple people, came to know of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by mercy.
Just like all the pastimes of Krishna is lost and then rediscovered, and same thing happened to Mahaprabhu's pastimes and got rediscovered.
The places of pastimes.
Places of pastimes. Similarly, like going forward, all the pastimes which Prabhupada established will also be lost down there. Don't they? And is it valid assumption?
Many of the activities of Prabhupada have been captured in book form and even in video form, like the place where he spent his childhood. There's an attempt by the Bhaktivedanta Memorial Trust to acquire that property. The 26 Second Avenue storefront is in a 44 apartment building. We have our bid in to buy the building, because it's just an apartment and part of a big building. There's no certainty what will happen. But, and most of the places of pastime were temples. But even some of the temples where Prabhupada stayed, since that time they've turned over and, you know, they got another temple and another temple because they outgrew that space or something. Properties changed hands for other reasons, but at least the memory of the place is enshrined in literature form. Yes.
Gumash, you were explaining these three aspects that are important, that when Lord Chaitanya assigned Mukunda
Narahari and Raghunandan.
Raghunandan, the three finances, deity worship, and preaching. From the part of financing, you said it was material wealth as well as
earn spiritual and material wealth was his instruction.
Yeah, and you say that there is no difference between any of those, and sometimes we have.
There's no spiritual difference from the point of view of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's certainly difference in those three activities, but does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say, okay, if you do preaching, you're good. If you earn material wealth, well, you're not as good, because if you're really good, you can go and preach. That, in that sense, they're, from the view of Mahaprabhu, they're equal. Each are needed. In that sense, equal.
Personalities have a very unique relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like, and
and they have a unique personality too.
Yes.
But at the same time, there was this whole culture of like unity and diversity. They were very diverse in their moods.
Very diverse.
So how to cultivate that mood of like unity and diversity? Because in our own society, we see that there is so much of diversity. How to be respectful and create that culture?
Well, first of all, it's a challenge, and second of all, it's an instruction that Prabhupada gave. And how to do it is, without purity, it won't happen. With purity in this case means being free from false designation or upadhi. If we think of ourselves as, you know, I'm a sannyasi and you're grihasthas, that means I'm better. Or somebody thinks, I'm a manager and you're managed, I'm better. Or someone thinks, I'm a preacher and you just worship deity, so I'm better. You think in terms of the self, in terms of designations. You're not going to have unity. You're going to have disunity. You're going to have ego and pride and dissension. So what fosters unity is to see beyond the designation. Sarvopadi vanir muktam tat paratvain nirmalam. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam. That we have to see the devotion. With which each person is doing their service. And we respect that devotion. And that's where the unity comes. The diversity comes where that devotion is expressed diversely. And there should be a sense of another dimension of harmony is respecting the importance of this part, that part, and the other part. In other words, take those three services. If all there was deity worship, or all there was earning spiritual and material wealth, or all there was preaching, it's incomplete. It's alone, it's incomplete. We require, so we should respect the value of the other expressions of devotion. As Mahaprabhu did, we should. Neither of those two things are going to happen without purity. We won't see devotion without purity. We'll see the covering, we'll see the external, we'll see the form instead of the essence. With purity we can see both the form and the essence. Appreciate the form and appreciate the essence. This is a little bit like the question yesterday about, I don't recall exactly if the word was, Hemangi's question about Shivananda Sen was expert. Was that the word that you use, expert? So how do we become expert? How do we become good at doing our service? And the answer to that question is similar to the question you're asking. Is that in somebody's coat and it just keeps going off? Okay. So, is that okay? You can listen to that. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, you did mention something, and I recently heard also. Our parampara is we see Siksha parampara coming. So, what is the significance of that? Like, for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was taking Siksha from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So, what is the significance of that versus we?
Your question. Let me make sure I understand your question. What's the significance of a combined Diksha Shiksha line as opposed to an exclusive Diksha line? Well, in simple terms, we value, according to the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, written by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, we value both equally. That's the significance. In the case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his Diksha Guru was in a Diksha line from Madhvacharya, a direct Diksha line. So he was initiated in direct disciplic succession. However, his Diksha Guru had, I don't know how to say this respectfully, but had in some ways deviated. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't disrespect his Diksha Guru, but his principal shelter was his Shiksha Guru. And so that line goes, you could make it go through his Diksha Guru, but it's through his Shiksha Guru. Because we value both equally, and that was the principal place where his inspiration in Krishna consciousness was coming. And that chart, that disciplic line chart, was that we found in our Bhagavad Gita, was given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada just took that, and then his name followed. Anything else?
Continuation to yesterday's you know, we talked about Raghunath Das Goswami.
Yes, yes.
So he is our Prayojanacharya.
Prayojanacharya, that's right.
What is the significance of meaning, or what is the significance of the Acharya? See, Prayojanacharya meaning.
He taught, Acharyas taught by example. So he taught by example how to come to the full manifestation of the fruit of devotional service, prayojana, the stage of loving Krishna in fullness. So Rupa Goswami taught by his writings and by example how the process of devotional service should be executed. And Sanatana Goswami in his teachings provides us the teachings of understanding that relationship, the fundamentals of understanding that relationship. Okay. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Chaitanya Mahāprabhu ki, Gaura Premanandi Hari Bol.